This episode of Scene Report is brought to you by Super Burrito. Super Burrito is a New York taqueria serving San Francisco Mission-style burritos, quesadillas, tacos, and bowls since 2017. It is located in Rockaway Beach and Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Super Burrito is owned and operated by my homie Eugene, who grew up in San Francisco. Eugene is obviously very proud of being from the 415 area code, and Eugene tells me that customers in New York often say to him that it's the closest thing to a San Francisco burrito that they've tasted in New York City. I have learned so much about Mission-style burritos from Eugene and from Super Burrito, just hearing from him about the history and the culture of those burritos in San Francisco. I had been to the Bay Area, San Francisco, the Mission a handful of times and eaten a whole bunch of burritos whenever I was there. There's all these different style of burritos from different parts of the United States, different parts of Mexico, right? Like a burrito in Juarez, Mexico, or a burrito in New Mexico, or a burrito in LA versus a burrito in San Diego versus a burrito in San Francisco. They all have their own specific styles. And the Super Burrito, what makes it so awesome is just like a huge burrito full of rice, beans, your protein, you know, pico de gallo, avocado, sour cream, cheese. When I went out to San Francisco the last time, Eugene sent me to some of their favorite places like Taqueria El Buen Sabor, El Castellito, La Taqueria, El Farolito, Taqueria Cancun. And after eating at all those spots, I was like, yes, I can tell the obsessiveness and the detail that Eugene was putting into trying to create his favorite childhood burrito spots, but bring them to the East Coast. Super Burrito is my personal favorite burrito that you can find in New York. Just the love and care that goes into everyone, the way they roll it up and the sauces all mixed together and the juice and the grease from the meat is falling out, and you get those little pockets of joy in every single bite of that burrito that you take. Super Burrito is a taste of the Bay in every bite. And now, here's our episode. What is good, listeners of the podcast Scene Report? Thank you for tuning in. Once again, this is your host, Reed Dunley. I'm pretty stoked about this episode today. We've got with Josephine of the Josephine Network, a fantastic rocker, New York rocker, New York queer rocker icon that we had the pleasure of speaking with. I like the Josephine Network a lot. I like Josephine's music. I'm kind of stoked for this one. And what's fun about this one too is like, maybe you haven't heard Josephine play music before, and you're gonna listen to it after you stop listening to this episode. And if you live in New York City, you're gonna go see Josephine play, and you'll be like, yeah. I'm a fan. I'm a pretty big fan. That's my impression of you, the listener, in like the super near future. I first saw the Josephine Network play in 2019 at the Broadway in Bushwick, Bed-Stuy border on Broadway. You know, I was thinking about, I really can't remember the name of what that place used to be before it was called the Broadway. It was right behind a cool, like sick DIY venue called the Glove. I guess the Glove was kind of more behind what's now called the Broadway, but for the life of me, I can't remember what that was called before that. That space. The Glove was like the next era of like Brooklyn DIY hipster venue type thing, like after the Williamsburg scene, like, you know, 285 Ken and Death by Audio and Glasslands and Cameo and all those places. Cameo, is that the place is called? Does that even count? I don't know. After those places, like when stuff moved farther out into Bushwick, I feel like the Glove was like very much like of an era of like, when was that? 2000, 16, 17, something. Anyways, I saw, it was like completely irrelevant to the Josephine Network. Like I saw them play around the corner from that spot at the Broadway, this super sick, fun show, party, almost like variety show that my, my great, great pal Dan Rogalski used to put on called Okay Look, where they would do a show that had like comedy, drag, and bands, typically rock bands, all on the same gig or the same bill or whatever. Dan's old band Big Huge used to play a lot, and you know, I would check these shows out because it was really fun and unique. It was like a very like cool, fun, interesting queer party, and you could like, you know, it was like fun to see like a comedian. Like I don't go to comedy shows, you know, and always cool to see drag in Brooklyn. And then like also you could see a rock show. And yeah, I remember the Josephine Network playing the show. It was 2019. I was like, damn, like Josephine is like so good at the guitar, and has just like really good songs. Really, really good songs. Really, really good fucking riffs. And it definitely was like a glammy vibe and like a rocker vibe, but like, I don't know. I was hooked, and I kind of knew Josephine around from knowing our mutual friend Dan, who would put that show on, and we had hung out before. But I was like, oh shit! Like I did not know it was like this. Like I remember Josephine like strumming on, you know, an acoustic guitar at some like house parties and stuff, kind of like playing like classic rock and roll songs. But then when I saw that show, I was like, damn. Fucking respect. So yeah, fast forward, whatever, that was like 4 years ago. I've gotten the chance to see Josephine Network play a handful of times since then. You know, Josephine also plays in Brower, which is like a garage, also kind of glammy like rock band from New York that I really fuck with, because like that's fronted by Brower of one of my favorite recent rock bands out of New York City, Nancy, who I randomly got the pleasure of seeing the night before tonight, or you know, the night before I'm recording this thing, whenever you're listening to this thing. How are we gonna do that math? Not quite sure. It's gonna be a mystery. But yeah, I've seen Josephine play in Brower also, and she plays in Suo and used to play in the Genies and Velveteen Rabbit. And what I really like about this interview, and what I think you're going to like about it, is like, I feel like a really, I don't know, I feel like a really cool part about the Josephine Network is how like timeless the music can really sound. And we get into like some of the, like some conversations around like genre and, you know, moving back and forth between some different genres, like, you know, what I'm calling like folk. Josephine kind of describes it differently. I'll let her speak for herself, but also rock, country, etc. And yeah, I think that there's like, you know, I think sort of getting to know the influences of Josephine, again, I'll let her speak to those, but like makes that timelessness of the music make a lot more sense to me, especially on this record, No One's Rose, their LP, Josephine Network's LP that came out in 2023, that like I really love that record and have spent a lot of time with it. And I think it's just like so like lyrically clever and understated and, you know, smart, and I love it. And, you know, straightforward also, but just like musically, yeah, kind of like weaves through these different genres in a way that is like not corny. That can be like, that can be so corny to put out a record that like, here's this song that sounds like this type of music. Now here's this song that sounds like this type of music. And, but it's like this record, like does it good. And that's happened sometimes, but you know, not always. And I also just like, yeah, that's kind of like the first part of the timelessness. And the other part of the timelessness is I'm really kind of like, I'm really kind of fucking around with a theory here, but I think that like the story that Josephine tells of like, you know, coming up with a character named Josephine that was paying homage to Josephine's Yenta grandmother, artist, New York lady, and sort of like coming into that character as a eventual like full on real life identity, like outside of the rock show, and you know, person, whatever. I don't know. I just think that there's like something about that idea in my head about the timelessness of the music, and that this Josephine is kind of like was born, this person was sort of born out of like an homage or like a respect out of like a someone from a different generation that Josephine was you know, trying to still connect with on a certain level, but also on an extremely New York level. Cause I think like, if I had to be like, oh, how would you describe Josephine's music? Because it is like kind of like goes through different genres. Like an easy thing would be to say like glam, right? But like the thing that you like really, I think, would just say is like New York. Like it's just like a New York band. Like you can hear that T-Rex and that Bowie and that television and like all that shit. Like, and then some of this other stuff too when it gets into other genres. It's just New York. And I love New York shit. I don't give a fuck if you don't love New York shit, because you probably do without even knowing that you love New York shit. But you know, everyone loves New York. Everyone around the world loves New York. Go anywhere, wearing a New York Yankees hat, they're like, "Oh shit, you're from New York." And it's like, yeah, Josephine is a New York band. Josephine Network is a New York band. Josephine is a New York artist. And I'm gonna let Josephine tell us about her life and her work. You know, since this interview was recorded, she's put out a newer single called Valerie, which is like a total hard rock, heavy glam turn. Has a really cool music video shot on Super 8 that was directed by Dylan Mars Greenberg. And that track also premiered in AM New York, which is like so classic New York to me, like premiering in like the free newspaper that you get on the subway that's still in business in 2024. And right around when this episode is dropping, there's also a new single coming out from Josephine, produced by the Lemon Twigs, which I think Josephine is a big fan of that. So listen to that music, listen to Josephine. This podcast is called Scene Report. It's about scenes, right? And like when scenes like overlap is like when I get like particularly interested about scenes, right? And like Josephine is of the rock scene in New York and of the queer scene in New York, and like makes both of those things more interesting and like unified. And like, you know, if you go to New York rock shows, sometimes you're like, yeah, this is a little like boring, a little like straight laced here, a little, you know, played out sometimes. But then you got someone like Josephine up in there kind of like turning that all on its head a little bit. And you got to respect it. So Josephine of the Josephine Network on Scene Report. Josephine, on Scene Report, thank you for coming to my kitchen. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Tell me about the distinction between Josephine and the Josephine Network.
Well, Josephine is just my name. That's who I am. And Josephine Network is my band.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
And it's also, it's the umbrella of which I release music. So sometimes I'll make something that isn't with the band and it'll be under Josephine Network because it's just the umbrella for
Got
my
it.
Music.
Who is Josephine?
I'm a singer-songwriter and a music teacher. That's basically my main gigs. I like to write songs, play them on guitar, record. I love to perform. And I'm also a music teacher and I love to teach. So, yeah.
What's the guitar that you like to write them on?
Well, I have this cool acoustic. It's a Hoyt, which is like a custom. Like Hoyt
Skimmer horn?
I don't know. the train stop.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a relation, but
one of those New York names that no one knows. There's some person from some point in time, right, who had a lot of money who was named that.
Yeah, and this guy Carl Hoyt makes guitars, and he's out in Cape Cod, and so the guitar has like shells and dolphins on the inlay and stuff, and it just sounds really nice. So I write on that. I also write on my Strat. I have a 87 American Strat that's like I had for like 15 years or something like that, and I just like love it so much.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad. That's
the guitar I usually use live.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad actually to talk about this because I'm bad at the names of songs and the names of anything, so forgive me. I can get people's names, but like other stuff I have a hard time with. But you have one track on your record where you kind of talk about like your relationship with like the feel of the piano keys or the guitar strings versus a lover or whatever.
Oh, cool.
And I'm just curious I don't know what my question is, but is the instrument itself, do you have like a sort of like relationship and a working relationship with like specific instruments that you like to write on?
Well, that's a good question.
Or are they just all interchangeable and like whatever's good?
Well, the guitar is my main instrument. It's like a limb at this point. It's just like an extension of myself.
Which limb?
its own. I love to play guitar. It's very natural for me. I could do it with my eyes closed. Like I could do it when I'm like asleep, basically.
I feel like I've seen you look up a lot when you're playing.
Oh, I love to look up. I like to look out so that everyone can see, and I like to smile because I'm having a blast when I'm playing, and I want everyone to have a good time too, and I like performers who look out. Sister Rosetta Tharpe, like she's like really sick rock guitarist who like kind of invented rock guitar in a way. She always looked out like this and like smiled a lot. And I like that kind of performing.
Yeah.
But I also, there's sometimes I don't smile too. Sometimes I'm like fierce and I like doing that too. But sometimes it shows like you have to kind of like make it interesting for yourself. And there's times when I kind of set it in mind. I'm like, I don't want to look at my guitar at all this whole show. Or like,
and that's like a little challenge.
A little challenge. Yeah.
Is that hard? Like, I'm not, I don't know how to play an instrument very good.
It's
like,
not that hard for me. Well, I just know the fretboard really well. And so like, I know where the like seventh fret is. And like, I guess like sometimes I'll have to like glance if I'm like really sliding around.
And you're like, God damn, it show's ruined. Like the second you kind of said it.
I'm like, oh, that was a B plus at best.
Yeah.
No.
You walk off stage.
But then also like, I don't know, like it could be cool to like, if there's like a particularly moody, like an instrumental section where I don't want to look at the crowd at all or something. Or sometimes I like looking at my bandmates too and like just connecting in that way. And like we have this big band. So it's like, there's a lot of like little friendships in the band, and like, there's like little, little jokes between us all and stuff.
Who's your, Who's your best friend in the band and who's your least favorite friend in the band?
Taxi.
Interviews over. You don't have to answer that question.
No, well, I mean, Max is like my best friend, Hirsch guy. He's like one of my best friends ever.
And you guys have put out some music together.
Yeah, for sure. And Tony is like my sister. But I love everyone in the band. Yeah, so
except for Nat.
Yeah, Nat's got some work to do. No, just kidding. We love Nat. Nat's like the glue holding the whole thing together in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
While we're sort of, I feel like we went back for a moment there in your life. Can you tell me about I'm going to ask like a litany of random first questions and then you decide which one is interesting.
Okay.
Like, when did you first get a guitar? When did you first go to a rock concert?
Okay.
When did you decide you wanted to play music? Answer any of those you feel like.
All right. I got a guitar when I was in, I think, freshman year of high school. Or it might have been like right before freshman year because my birthday's in August. And I think it was like that summer before high school.
Eighth going into ninth.
Yeah. In total like Jimi Hendrix mode. And like
in Westchester, New York.
Yeah. From this little like village called Ardsley. It's like literally smaller than a town. It's like, and no one knows it.
Do you know how big the population is?
It's small. I know that. It's definitely small. And like, it's near, like when I say Ardsley, no one knows what that is. But then I say it's near White Plains and people know what that is. Or like even Dobbs Ferry is more well known, but it's a little like river town.
Yeah.
In Westchester.
Is it on the river?
Almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's because Dobbs Ferry is on the river, and that's like a walk. It's like a 10-minute walk away.
So you're in Ardsley.
Yeah.
About to go into ninth grade. You got a guitar from.
I got it. So my dad. Yeah, my dad played. And my dad is like a big influence on me, like musically and stuff. And my dad grew up in the Bronx, like, and was in doo-wop bands. Like, he was in this doo-wop band called Junior and the Claremonts.
Cool.
And that was like in the 50s. Whoa. And like early 60s. And then
he played the guitar in it.
I think he played guitar in that. He may have just sang, but I think he played guitar. And I know that he like learned Beatles songs on guitar and just like always had a guitar. Like he went to the Navy like during Vietnam and like had a guitar like on the ship and stuff. And that's how he would like navigate like the hell of that like world.
Yeah.
And he's a professor now, a math education professor, but also like loves to play and like has written songs and I'm, you know, it's kind of the opposite where it's like I'm like more of a songwriter, musician, and then I'm also a teacher, but I kind of prioritize the songwriting more, you know, I like both.
Yeah. Tell me about your scene.
So I guess my scene is like rock and roll and I guess like I exist at this like intersection of like rock and roll and like the queer scene and like, so I guess I'm in both worlds and I'm just in both worlds.
Tell me, like, being in both worlds, do you feel like do they feel pretty distinct to you? Do you feel like there's overlap? Do you feel like you're like doing your thing in the rock scene, doing your thing in the queer scene? Do you think like, you know, I you know, we were even talking a minute ago about like, I know that there was like that OK Look party that I saw you play at like years ago, where I loved when it like brought that sort of stuff together. I
wish there was that more. And it is like, it often is hard because it is like the rock scene is more straight, but that's like what I want to do. And I love rock and roll, but like, it is like an uphill battle. Like even just being a rock and roll band in any case, but then being queer is like, it's even more like niche. Cause like a lot of the queer scene revolves around like dance music. And then like a lot of the rock scene revolves around like hardcore music. And I'm just like, you know, doing my own thing. But I love when when the worlds collide and like we're able to celebrate like queer rock and roll, because like that was the origin with like Little Richard and stuff like that.
When did you like first start like getting into the rocker scene, and when did you first start getting into the queer scene? Did those sort of things happen around the same time in your life?
Well, I think I was like, I was more like out as a rocker before I was like out as queer. I think they like have always been like hand in hand, where like they're like outlets for like my expression, and like rock and roll is about like no holds barred and just like being your total like unhinged self. And so like I think being into rock and roll and like pursuing songwriting helped me like find myself as a queer person. But in some ways made me feel more alone, because I looked around the room and didn't see many other queer people. So yeah, it's a complicated life, I guess. And but I as I age, I'm just like not trying to like fit into anything, and I'm just like being myself. So
yeah, that kind of brings me to like something I wanted to talk about based on we were talking before we turned these mics on, and I was like, wait, we gotta shut up, because like all the things you're saying are so interesting. I gotta wait till we get it in there. And what brought me to this, and I don't do this very often, but I love, like, I don't read from other people's interviews a lot, but I just like loved this quote that you had in this interview with Hellgate. You did with I think the person's name is pronounced Adlin.
Yeah,
Adlin Jackson.
Uh-huh.
Which is like, and it's a New York City like media blog thing. How did you describe it? Like sassier than gossip. Gotham is. Yeah. Which I loved. And like and I want to read this to you, because it also sounds like when we were chatting earlier that this has sort of like morphed since then a little bit. This interview was this year, I think.
Yeah. So yeah, I did that. That was like, it was my favorite like interview I've done. And I did that like in like late spring or like early summer, like right after I got off tour with its Lemon Twigs, and like and I was just, yeah, I liked that interview. And wait, what was the question again?
So I didn't get there yet. I want to read you this. I want to read you this quote, actually, that you said. So I'm going to read something that you said.
Yeah.
Get very meta for a moment. I dropped out of school to play rock and roll. That's what I dedicate my whole life to. I like that I'm able to be immersed in the rock and roll scene and queer scene. And Josephine is a character that I created that can fit into both worlds. And then I just decided to become her, because it was more fun to be her than anyone else. And now I'm her all the time.
Yeah. Which is kind of, that says it all, really.
Yeah.
That, and that's, yeah, like, honestly, like I through like my rock and roll character, Josephine, I created Josephine as like, looking back now, like I created Josephine as a way for me to safely like transition. And I created this character, like this feminine character, before like I was ready to just be the woman I am now. And she like protected me and guided me to where I am now. And it's like, through my art, I was able to like manifest my reality. So yeah.
Sick.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about like your early conceptions of Josephine and how the Josephine journey has come to the point where that's you now?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I started Josephine as like, I was doing a kind of Yenta character, like, I'm all like Jewish and my whole family's Jewish, and I'm like, you know, we go back to my ancestors escaping the Tsar in Russia, coming over Ellis Island style. And like, so all my like older relatives have that like New York voice that like, oh, hello, like I'm Josephine. So I just like, I started adopting this like kind of Bobby Yenta voice and character as a kind of like, It's a character that people can easily understand. So it was helpful in that way. And then it's a character that it felt timeless. It is like a timeless New York character. And also kind of like an ancestral like shield, like to protect me. Like when my grandma passed, like my mom's mom, Estelle, she was like a brilliant painter and also like a total Yenta. And I felt like very inspired by her personality. And I just like, part of creating the character was like processing my grief over that. And then
when did that happen, if you don't mind me asking?
That was in 2018.
Okay.
And I started Josephine in 2019.
Got it.
So it was a lot of things like involved in Josephine that have I created out of a way to heal myself in a hard time, and Josephine's like guided me to who I am today, which I go by Josephine, but I'm not a character. I'm like, I'm really her, like, so and maybe like I have a more boring voice because like I'm from Westchester, I'm not like from the Bronx or whatever. So, but like, yeah, I don't need to hide behind a voice anymore, which is really nice.
Love it. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, like, what sort of, you know, what sort of paintings was Estelle making? And were you like, I don't know, did that sort of art and other art and culture of your grandparents and that generation of people around you growing up, did that have an influence of like how you approach your art at all?
Well, my grandma was making like really evocative oil pastel still lifes and portraits that were like inspired by like Vermeer and like classic like art like that. And her work is like very like pleasing to look at. It's very classic, and it's like, you know, you appreciate like the way the light reflects off the apple and the like bowl of fruit, and like the little like, if it's in like a gold container, like the little like shimmer of light off of that, and like the little detail of like the lace coming off of the tablecloth coming off of the table. Mm-hmm. And how it drapes and curls in a certain way. And I'm just like, just kind of like an aesthetic, like joy, like in a classical kind of like formalism as well. So I think like what I do, it's like, there is a little bit of like formalism to it of like rock, like the rock and roll that I play is like very informed by like past rock and roll, and like there is an element of like I'm doing this for like aesthetic enjoyment, and also there's a formal element, but I also want to be like irreverent as well. So
And what does irreverent mean exactly?
Oh, like not so like revering. Like it's like a little bit like not jokey, but like prankster. Yeah. And so I feel that for sure. Like I mean, like if you look at like the song and video for like Me and My Boys or something, like that's so tongue in cheek and like saying certain things I'm saying it ironically, but then there's kind of like, I don't know. Like there is this weird, like, I don't think sincerity and irony exist on a binary. I think that like, we're almost like past those distinctions in this, like, and almost past the distinction of camp, because camp is like, I love camp, by the way, like, and like the John Waters movies and like Divine and that she's an influence on me in the way I present glamour and just like as a bigger girl too, and like but like the like I think the world, like camp is supposed to be an exaggeration of reality, but reality now is so exaggerated. Like if you look at our leaders, like Trump is a fucking camp like villain, like wearing these like ridiculous hair pieces and like be like just being the worst person, and it's just like reality is so beyond camp that it's like I can't say what I do is camp because I'm not exaggerating anything, like I'm just being normal in, like, you know what I mean, like I'm just like look around you, it's like this is absurd out here, like so I think the distinctions of camp and sincerity and stuff, it's just like we're kind of past that.
Yes. All of that. And also I think like to the point of your aesthetic and art, like
yeah.
Those like differences, those potential differences between irony / camp
yeah.
and sincerity, what makes those hard to like, what makes those not feel on different ends of the spectrum or binary, as you put it, is that like all of your songs rip. You know what
you.
I mean?
Thank
so
you.
It's like, it's one thing to be like, oh, this is like an ironic band because here's like their country song and here's like their glam song,
right?
And it's like, you know, it's whatever, they're just like kind of fucking around, but you're like, oh, like to the way that your grandmother made her art where you saw the shimmer coming off of the side of the tablecloth, it's
yeah.
like all of your songs have the shimmer coming off of the side of the tablecloth. You know what
you.
I mean, like they're
thank
all like
you.
Okay, this is perfect, this is perfect, this is perfect. This all goes through. So like, you know, listening to your music, especially like your most recent record, No One's Rose, it's like there's a lot of different genres happening there,
mm-hmm.
but the reason why it works, I think, is because it's like, it's not like here's the throwaway, it's like these all there's probably a lot of reasons why it works, but one of them is because of that.
Yeah, I thank you for saying that. I don't want to put out a bad song. Like that sounds like a nightmare to me. Like, and so I really try and like put my heart into like every song. And, that record is very serious, like, and to a degree that is a little much for me listening back right now, like at where I'm at now. But it's also like, yeah, it's just I was in a different place then and now I'm a little more like settled in myself and I feel a little less like devastated. And I like a lot of that record is like very heavy and very lonely and dealing with like intense, hardcore loneliness. That's a line from Tom Petty when in the album Long After Dark, and he goes, I've had enough of this hardcore loneliness. And so like now my this record I'm making now, it's called Rock and Roll Singer. And it's like, It's like that. It's like, I've had enough of this hardcore loneliness, and I'm like, I'm really like, it's like a joyride. It's going to be like a victorious rock and roll joyride. So that, and yeah, so I guess like there is this kind of like softness to my first couple records, like Music Is Easy and No One's Rose. And I want to kind of just be more like, I'm just feel more tough lately, and because of who I am, and I have to be tough to live the way I live and to be who I am. And I just want to reflect that in the music, and yeah, it's gonna have like riffs.
I believe you.
Yeah,
and I don't want to get too far. I don't want to get too close to Rock and Roll Singer before I ask you just a little bit more about No One's Rose too.
Oh yeah, for sure.
If that's okay, because like, and maybe this is, you know, maybe this is just a little bit of a like rephrasing of what I was just saying, but what you were saying was making me think about it differently. But like, I don't know, maybe getting away from the question of like the heaviness of and the loneliness and the lyrical content, but like on the more of the like music side, you know, there's like songs where I hear glam and T-Rex,
right,
obviously, and there's songs where I hear country, obviously, and it was giving me, I'm not very good at like placing like this sounds like this band, but there were moments where I was like, okay, this reminds me of like, you know, New Riders of the Purple Sage a lot. This reminds me of Graham Parsons a lot, like the LA cowboy scene shit. There were records that reminded me of Simon and Garfunkel folk stuff. Like, I guess, I don't know, when you kind of have like a sort of like genre expansive record, like what for you is like the through line that you're trying to like keep through all that stuff?
Okay, that's a good question. I think for No One's Rose, like I was listening to a lot of the album Trio, which is like the 80s album with Dolly Parton, Emmylou Harris, and Linda Ronstadt. And I love all three of them, and they're all like different. And that record has a lot of eclectic vibes on it. And it has, there's traditional country music. There's Appalachian folk inspired music, and there's even girl group covers, like they cover To Know Him Is to Love Him. So there's like the New York influence in that. And so I kind of listened to that. I was like, oh, like this is kind of like my way into like country in a way. I'm just like, as a like New York person, I'm just like, it's funny for me to be doing a country record, but like there is like a way in which I could do this. And like Emmylou Harris, if you know about her beginnings, she was a New York folky before she went country. She wanted to be like Joan Baez, and she was playing in like New York coffee houses. And then she like kind of like met up with Graham Parsons. And then she said like she started playing country as a goof, and then it became, somewhere along the way, became really serious. And that's very much like how this record is, where I started recording it with Adam Amram. And I met,
tell us who that is.
Oh yeah. So Adam Amram is a cool like singer songwriter in the city. And I met him through his sister, Alana Amram, who's a really brilliant songwriter as well. And she's a really good friend of mine. And Adam has a little like home studio and has a little label called After the Fall. And we like, I guess, yeah, Alana like kind of introduced us, and we got a little like session, because I like showed Alana a couple demos I had of like country leaning stuff. And she's like, yeah, like let's go to my brother's studio and record it. And so it was like me, Adam, Alana, and John Catfish, who's like a pedal steel, like the resident pedal stealer of New York. Mm-hmm. So that was a really good crew. And we did Howdy Girl. Oh, well, first we did a song called Judge Judy. That was the very first. That was the song that kind of sparked the whole record.
Makes sense.
And so this is another like foot in the door moment of like, as a Jewish woman, like, how do I do country? Well, country people like Judge Judy and she's a Jewish woman. So I'm just like, there's like a connection there. And so I just felt like, and Judge Judy is this like no bullshit character. And I wanted to make like a no bullshit record. And so like,
step into my courtroom.
yeah. And also Judge Judy is kind of like a queer icon, like, because she is this like no bullshit woman who's like isn't afraid to tell it like it is and like really like sit you down and like read you to filth, like, and so I wanted to make like a queer country song embodying Judge Judy, but there's a lot of layers in that song, but it's mostly about like judgment and a little bit about like the culture war, like cancel culture in a way of like, how could you judge me? And then how could you judge me? And you don't look like Judge Judy, like, you know, so why would you put me on trial? And there's like, it starts in like the male voice, like with that line, like, if you don't look like Judge Judy, so why would you want to put me on trial? But then it flips quickly to the woman, and it's kind of like a couple's argument, like, and she's kind of like, well, you don't look like my daddy, but you love to say you had me way back when. And so it's like they're going back and forth, and in a way I'm like presenting both sides, but ultimately I'm taking the side of the woman. There's that. So that song just like came together in the studio, and then Howdy Girl was the next song that was literally a throwaway, and I had written it like, all I had was like, hey girl, like howdy girl, like, I don't know, I was like, hey mama, hey girl, like, hey darling, howdy girl, like, that was it, like, and so like we were just in the studio, we had just done a great take of Judge Judy, they were like, do you have anything else? And so I just started like playing the Howdy Girl riff, and I didn't have a second verse, and I just ad-libbed it basically. I was just like, hey sugar, like, hey girl, hey mama, howdy girl. That's maybe my favorite song on the record, because it's just like, it's super fun, and like that one is the lighter of a very heavy record, and so it was cool to do like both those tracks, one being very deep and one being like a little lighter. But yeah. But yes, and I'm ranting, but
I'm not going to stop you when it's like, I want to hear all that, you know what I mean?
But like, I also think that song is like a serve, because it is like T-Rex, but countrified. And I don't think 100%. Many people like know how to do that.
So. Yeah, I don't think I've heard that exactly, but it is 100% T-Rex countrified. That's the way to describe it.
Yeah.
And it's so good. I mean, the vocals are, it's in my head right now.
Oh, thank
you. And maybe that's getting back to a question. Well, did we get here?
Yeah.
What's the through line for you? I have some ideas.
That trio album, really, like the way it was structured with traditional country, Appalachian folk music, and girl group, that is how No One's Rose is structured, kind of. It's like,
so what's the trio for No One's Rose?
Well, just, it's just me and my personalities or whatever, but
I mean, what are the three genres?
No, that's what
around?
It is, it, there's country, it's
country,
Appalachian folk style, like with the title track, like No one's rose. That minor is that's very like what they call old time music, like vibes. And my roommate at the time was into the folk revival stuff, and his dad, my old roommate Dylan Smith, his dad was part of this band, the Chicken Chokers, who was like a really legit Appalachian band in Boston. And so I think that like just rubbed off on me a little at the time. And
fire band name.
yeah. They're like kind of like a punk Appalachian band. And so
Say No More fam.
So yeah. And so like, yeah, like I guess, yeah, I wanted to make something that was like a little bit country, a little bit rock and roll, a little bit girl group, and like some folky stuff. Cause the folk could be like very New York, like Simon and Garfunkel-y, like what I said with Emmy Lou's like beginnings. And there's like this, that 70s period of country is like pretty like amorphous and like fluid itself, which is like what I wanted to evoke here, where I think of like country music, but like it's also hippie music, and like it's also like pop music and rock and roll. So I love those genres for their like the storytelling too, and like the like country as a medium to like tell a story.
Okay, so given that breakdown and given maybe a little bit of a shift into rock and roll singer and the joyride you're about to take us on sonically, how do you like, this is like the dumbed down question, like what is your genre? How do you, when you have to put it in a box,
I would say rock and roll. Yeah, rock and roll, that's my genre. I mean that's my heart and soul, and like that is like, you can umbrella it that way. And I like the term rock and roll. It makes me feel happy. Other genre titles don't make you feel as happy, or they just make me feel like more brainy or something. But rock and roll hits, the words hit, and it's not like a term that's cool at all, like right now, like, or people aren't like repping that at all. And
it's dead.
Yeah, it's dead. It's been dead.
It's not on the radio.
It's been dead since it started. It was like when rock and roll started, it was like, oh, this is a teen fad. It's gonna die out like any day now. And then like, there's been that sentiment about it forever. But it just, I'm gonna keep it going. And like, I have a lot of rock to make. I have like tons of songs. And like, I fucking love rock and roll. I'm a rock and roll victim, as Death would say.
I have a lot of rock to make. like to that point, just because like, you know, this podcast is called Scene Report, and we've obviously talked about that a little bit already, but like, is there something where it's like, even though you're going into these other subgenres or different spaces within that, is there something where it's like, if you're always going to be a rocker, is that kind of like what keeps you in a certain scene or community of other people who are rockers, even if the sound goes different ways?
Yeah, I think so. I think, and like, I think all, like my whole band is like, are like rock and roll like refugees or whatever. It's just like my whole band is like people who are in other rock bands, have been in other rock bands for a while, and everyone in my band has been around for a while and has been rocking for a while. And if you, and like, you know, Tony Lynn has been rocking for a while, Jay Pluck has been rocking for a while, Dorian has been rocking for a while, Nat's been rocking for a while, Hirschguy's been rocking for a while, Keith has been rocking for a while. So me and
how many people is it, by the way?
It's eight, and Sara has including been rocking you? For a while. Yes, eight including me. There's everyone I just named. I hope I didn't miss.
Yeah,
anyone.
Let's hope that was eight.
But yeah,
I already tried to pit you guys against each other earlier.
I know, but like, so with So when I started solo, I started doing Josephine with solo shows. And then Jay was playing with someone named Charlene Darling, this cool French singer-songwriter. And we shared a bill, and then he saw me play solo, and he was like, hey, I can play keys for you if you want. And so then the band just grew from there. Like, Nat was the drummer. We were a four-piece with me, Nat, Dorian, and Jay. We played our first like band show at the Glove in like 2019, and then like I met Tony and I was like, you have to be in the band. And so like it just grew and grew, and like Sarah is like the last to join, and she's like so cool, and like she's a sick backup vocal tambourine. My mom says that she should be our stylist, so because she looks really fucking good.
So will it be 9 one day soon?
Well, I don't know. There's only 8 crazy nights of Hanukkah, so.
What's your mom's and other family members' thoughts on your band?
My parents are like, my dad has been to a bunch of shows and he's cool. And my mom's first Josephine show was recently at Irving Plaza when we opened for the Lemon Twigs. And she,
you're like, come out to the big show.
Yeah. She doesn't even come to the dive bars or anything. But, you know, she was sold. and like I don't know if she like, she hasn't always been like cool about it, but I think like that night, like seeing the band, seeing the whole thing, and like then I like after our set, I like went up to the balcony and like sat with my mom and dad and watched the Twigs with them. I was in my like sparkly orange dress and like heels and stuff, and like my mom was like being cool, so it was like, yeah, so that was great.
I love it.
Yeah,
and I'll bet a bunch of other people at that show probably hadn't heard you guys play before, and they were probably sold too. So it was like a mass selling of Josephine
that your mom could get on board for. I want to do it again. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, hey mom, look how many people are clapping. Now you can clap too.
I feel like when I was like always doing like when I moved away from doing like only putting out like zines and like you know community radio shows, and I started actually like putting things into like reputable news outlets, not that they were big time places or anything, but every once in a while I would like, you know, write an article about some like punk friend of mine, and then they were like, thank you, because I was able to like show that to my mom, and then they're like, oh, this is real.
Yeah,
you
know what I mean? Totally.
It's like kind of the same vibe.
Yes, for sure.
I wanted to ask you I don't remember what I wanted to ask you. This interview is fun for me because it's one of those interviews where like all the things that are on my list, you kind of like get to them without me needing to get there, but you like bring this like different way than I was even thinking about asking the question, so it's perfect because you're able to like cut me out a little bit, which I think is important.
Well, I could talk about the new
thing. I was gonna say, let's talk about the new thing.
Cool. I wanted to make like a heavy riff hard rock glam rock record. That's what I'm making basically, and with some like punky power pop in there too and stuff, but these genres, like they're very like male dominated, very like cishet dominated, and like the glam rock like in the 70s was like very much like men kind of queer facing or like presenting queer but being straight in their everyday lives and kind of like sometimes not being the best people. And like, So I guess I wanted to like reclaim glam rock for like women and for trans women, and like if you look at like Bowie and Main Man and like Jane County. So Jane County is this trans woman in the CBGB's scene in the 70s, and like she had that band Jane County and the Electric Chairs, and she was on Main Man, which was like Bowie's label, and she says that he kind of kept her on the label and like took her ideas and didn't really like support her, and she was kind of like, she felt like taken advantage of. And it's like there is like this history of like queer people having the ideas and then like straight people like kind of taking them and like being more successful about it. And I just want to be like, well, you're like, look like I'm the real deal. Like I'm the real deal. Like I'm who I am on stage and off stage. So, yeah. So I think it's going to be really cool. And there's going to be riffs that you could really headbang to. And it's like all these guys now, like Paul Stanley and fucking D. Snyder and the other one, Alice Cooper, are making these anti-trans statements on Twitter and stuff. And all those bands were like wearing makeup and platform heels and shit, and it's just like made a whole living off of that, and they're just like totally like fucking us over now and with like ignorant statements. And it's like, who cares what they think? But like, it's also just like, come on, like if anyone should have solidarity, it's you. Yeah. And so yeah, my record's gonna be like better than Kiss.
You heard it here first. I guess you kind of just again answered my next question. What is your goal for the Josephine Network?
Well, like world beyond domination. World domination. My own casket line, like Kiss has. No, just kidding. I really do want to be like a big rock star, and like I just for like my inner child and stuff, like I think that would be pretty cool. Also, I have goals of being like a professor, and I want to be able to like teach at a college where I can teach about glam rock. I have a dream of like teaching a course on like 70s glam and like the feminist aspects, the queer aspects, and also like the critique of it, and like through different songs, like so that's something I want to do. And yeah, those are my aspirations. I want to be a big rock star and a professor.
Perfect. I do want to ask you one more question.
Oh, yeah.
Before I turn it over to you. And I'm just curious your thoughts on this. And this is really a question for me. But like sometimes when I go to a lot of rocker shows in New York. I probably go to more punk shows than rocker shows. But, you know, there's definitely like obviously a bit of overlap there. And I go to lots of different types of genres of music, right? And see lots of it live and also listen to lots of it. And the only there's a handful of gripes with like every scene for me. And the only like big like aesthetic gripe that I have, and like maybe there's a way that you can like put it into a new framing for me, is like sometimes I have a hard time with the like nostalgia element of like, I'm sure plenty of rock scenes around the country have that, but in New York, where I'm like, but this ain't the 60s,
yeah,
but everyone's kind of like dressed up like it is and sort of like acting like it is for the night, where like, I guess anytime, it's the same thing I have with like punk shows, where I'm like, but like, you know, anytime when there's like a, feels like this little bit of like inauthenticity, and that comes through in the nostalgia or like or wanting to be in a different era part, do you ever get that feeling at all? And like, I don't know, what do you think about that?
I definitely feel what you're saying, and the nostalgia can be like a little much, but I also engage in it, and I find that rock and roll, like, it, like, you can be any like character that you want to be, and I like when you go to like a show at like TVI or something, and then you look around and like everyone is kind of like in their own like character, and like I think it's important for people to have like fantasy and for people to be able to like express like a side of themselves that they can't at their like professional jobs and stuff, or and also the style from then is just really good, like visually pleasing, and like the fashion from the 60s and 70s, like, it looks really good. People look really hot, like that. And I think, like, it's just the style that, like, speaks to me. And, but yeah, of course, like, it can be done in, like, a cheesy way where it's, like, it looks, like, too on the nose or something. That's why it's good to, like, mix and match and kind of poke at that. I like to... Obviously, like, I'm always trying to, like, be contemporary in my thoughts, like, where, and, like, that can reflect in my style a little bit, too, but I don't think you need to be, like, dressing super modern, like, to be, like, thinking modern. I think you can have any, like, style you want if you have... like a good mindset, like, and you, and it's kind of, there is like a camp element, like a tongue-in-cheek vibe, like that, it's kind of like we're all like in this collective like fantasy together, and it's just like we know that we all like have phones and shit, like cell phones, like, you know, it's a little like shared like piece of, it is kind of like countercultural, because it's like, it's you know, we're all like sharing these artifacts of culture that were lost, whether we're like talking about like old records or like the style, or like bringing back the style. So it's a little bit of like preservation, but also a little bit of just like tongue-in-cheek like self-expression. Yeah,
I like all
and,
that
and I have had like a little bit of difficulty like fitting in with the punks, because I feel like there's an aesthetic, a stringent like aesthetic like thing with the punks that, I mean, maybe it's like more open-minded now a little bit, but it feels like glamour isn't embraced as much. And it's like, why is everything, everyone is like so anti-glamour, like even like the DIY scene and stuff, it's just like vanity and glamour are looked at as so negative. And I don't think vanity is negative. I think vanity is like a pretty peaceful like way to go about things. Like if you think about like Narcissus, like the Greek figure, like, wasn't he just like staring at himself and digging it? And then like someone was like, I want to be with you. But he was like, no, like, what's so wrong about that? Like, I don't know. Like, I think that like, look at Zeus, who's like a serial rapist. Like, that's wrong. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just think people are too, it comes from queer phobia, femme phobia, like people don't, they're scared of like, you know, they're just scared of glamour. It's weird.
Cool.
Yeah. Thanks for that. And I don't mean that all the punks are scared of that or I'm not trying to accuse anybody of anything. I've noticed
some
strain. Right. And I've just noticed like there's a lot of like so-called progressive leftists are like perpetuating machismo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I want to give it to you for the last word. What else do you want to say before we turn this thing off? What else are you thinking about?
Just keep rocking in the free world.
I don't know.
Josephine, thanks again. It's been a fun afternoon.
Thank you.
Appreciate you spending the time.
Thank you.
Peace. And that's it. That's all she motherfucking wrote. Thank you, Josephine, so much for sharing a little bit about your life and your music with me and the listeners of this podcast. Thanks to the folks who helped make this episode possible. Starting with me, Reed Dunley. I'm your host, producer, editor. Ash Tyner is our executive producer. This episode was associate produced by Jason Halal. The theme song is by Jesse Crawford. The logo is by Kyle Seeley. And first and foremost, thank you to Josephine for coming on here. Please rate, review, subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening. Make sure we get some engagement going on in there. You know, rate, review, subscribe. Those three little words that every podcast host loves to hear and say. We are on social media, mostly on Instagram. Handle is protest, the letter N, survive, protest and survive, which is the name of my old podcast. I'm still in Instagram limbo, purgatory, trying to get that name handle updated. If you work at Instagram, hit me up. I had one lead, but it kind of disappeared, and my old leads ain't there anymore. If someone could call Mark Zuckerberg on my behalf, that'd be sick. And yeah, we'll be back here real soon. As always, thank you to you, the listener. Wouldn't be possible without you. We'd just be talking into a microphone into oblivion if we didn't have some listeners. So thanks for sticking with us. Thanks to our new listeners for checking us out. Share this thing on your socials. Let other people know about it. And we're going to catch you all next time. Thank you so much. Scene Report. We out of here.